Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. Hey, look. We got Marcy Wheeler back on the show. Emptywheel.net. That's her blog. And that's her handle on Twitter, too. Hi, Marcy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Oh, did I say Marcy Wheeler? That's your actual name. Not your internet name. So she's not a lawyer, but she's as good as any lawyer in North America at reading legalese and telling you what it really means or what they're trying to obscure with it or whatever the hell. And she's a great writer, and she's really brilliant, and she cares all about the Bill of Rights and all the right ways, and it's great. So emptywheel.net, that's where you read what she writes. And so we got some all kinds of legal happenings today. First of all, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously did anything right? That can't be right. Really?
Well, we won't talk about the Aereo decision, which is a cluster. Can I say that word? Cluster?
Yeah, we know what you meant.
No, 9-0. This is, as Orrin Kerr pointed out at the Washington Post, this is 27-0 for the last three technology-related Fourth Amendment decisions at the Supreme Court. So they're coming around slowly. Our Supreme Court is learning.
Yeah, well, I just saw... never mind. That's not important enough to waste your time with. So now what exactly was at issue here with this cell phone search?
Couple guys who were stopped by the cops, and after stopped, the cops searched their cell phones and found incriminating evidence via the cell phones that busted them for other crimes, drug-related crimes, that kind of thing. And the Supreme Court held that they have to get a warrant before they do that going forward.
Mm-hmm. And now, they had been relying on the case of the matchbook full of drugs, right? Or the matchbox full of drugs that, hey, I had to search the guy when I arrested him. And so it's not my fault that I found heroin in his pocket when I had to do an inventory of his personal belongings. And so screw him. And they were saying that's the same thing as opening his phone up and reading his email.
Yeah, not just the phone, but I mean, not just the, finding drugs in a cigarette case, but also, searching for guns or what have you. Sam Alito wrote a kind of pathetic concurrence. He's still bought off on the opinion, but he was sort of like, I think you are misstating the reasons we have approved those kinds of searches. And he kind of raised your point because Roberts said... Roberts focused on the need to search people to make sure that suspects didn't either do something to hurt the cop or destroy evidence. And he said neither of those is going to happen in this case. So there's, so the interest clearly lies with privacy. And Alito said, but wait, we like to search for other reasons, but otherwise I agree with the opinion. So that's basically what Roberts said, though, is that there were a bunch of great lines. It's actually a fun read, but one of them, he's like, I'm going to misquote it, but he basically said, the data in a cell phone can't hurt a cop. It's true. Although, I think you'd find some governments who would disagree with that. And certainly some cops who would disagree that the pictures in a phone can't hurt a cop, but whatever.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to argue the bad guy's case here or whatever, but based on the precedent that they can open up a matchbook to see whether there are drugs, stashed in there or not, or matchbox, I guess was the case, if I remember it right. There's nothing in a matchbox that can hurt a cop either, right? I mean, there could be evidence in there, but I thought that the precedent was we stopped them for jaywalking and it's not our fault that he happened to have heroin in his matchbook, something like that, right?
Yeah, that would be the destroying evidence case. What Roberts said is basically you're not going to be able to wipe a phone when you get arrested, and a phone is not a cop's ability to access an encrypted phone is not going to change whether they immediately search it or not. So neither of those reasons, which are the ones the government gave, are compelling enough to to amount to a destruction of evidence case like the heroin and a cigarette case.
Right. Now, I saw a speech by Jonathan Turley one time that was just masterful, really, about how the war on drugs was used to erode the Fourth Amendment. And he went off on a kind of chain of consequences about roadside searches and how it had always been, you know, hey, you need a warrant just like any other search on the roadside. But then because of the war on drugs, they started, you know, well, you know, you're out on a public road after all. And so... and you're in a license, you have a license, and you have tax stamps and registration stamps on your car and all these kinds of things. And so it's not quite your private property free from search as much anymore. And they started lowering the threshold and lowering it and lowering it and using excuses like, come on, we can't go to the judge's house and, you know, in the middle of the night, miles from here, and wake him up and that kind of thing. And then Turley pointed out that, yeah, but, you know, ever since the invention of the cell phone and the text message and all of that kind of thing, they didn't repeal their precedent that said that going to the judge's house would be too much of a hassle or whatever. That was left over from a long time ago, when in fact it wouldn't be a hassle at all to get a warrant on the roadside because of the technological advance. But, oh well, the precedent's set and we're going to go ahead and only get worse from here, never better kind of thing. And... so it seems like they've got, you know, so many loopholes that, I mean, really, they can get a warrant just as easy as not at this point. So really, what difference does it make? All our cell phones are belong to them anyway.
Well, that's what I think is the honest takeaway, is that I, you know, for arrest warrants, I suspect the cops will build in a warrant to search a phone. Roberts did still allow for exigent circumstances to require a search, although I don't know what good it's really going to be. So you're right. For those circumstances, I think that the reality is still the same, although I think it makes it a lot harder for the government to use a traffic stop as the excuse to get your phone to search to find the evidence that they probably already have via some illegal means to then convict you on a drug case. So,
you're talking about the parallel construction. This won't be an excuse they can use.
Right. And I mean, it's not just parallel construction. I mean, if cops want to harass you, that's what they do anyway, is they stop you and then they kind of keep searching until they can find some legal means. And that's actually something Robert said. He's like, if you search through somebody's phone, you're going to find some evidence of illegality in there, whether it's that you were speeding or whether it's that, you know, what have you. But that's sort of the point, that, you know, those cell phones. And again, the language on it was, I think, really... at the end, he sounds like the frickin' ACLU. He's like, here's the instructions we give you, get a warrant. And it was pretty good on a lot of levels. And he maps out, there's about 8 paragraphs in the middle of the opinion, which I think will be cited from significantly as we go forward, talking about why cell phones, and he said, you know, he says cell phone isn't even the right term for it. These are computers, these are cameras, these are Rolodexes, these are all these other functions rolled into one, and that makes them different. And he went so far as to say that searching a cell phone is actually more intrusive than searching somebody's home, which is right, I think, but it's a pretty radical statement from where the law enforcement community is right now.
Yeah. Well, and considering whose clerk was writing it too, that's pretty good. And now I see what you mean when I saw you on Twitter pretty excited earlier that, hey, I think there's a lot to work with in this decision for citing on NSA cases all around here, right?
Right. I mean, I think, 2 years ago in the U.S. versus Jones decision, which was the GPS tracking equals a search, we had 3 different opinions. We had Sam Alito writing, you know, the plurality, which basically said this is property based. We had people like Breyer, who can actually be terrible on law enforcement issues, saying, well, there may be limits. And we had Sonia Sotomayor by herself saying, look, you know, technology requires that we reconsider these precedents. And I think it is not too much to say that today's opinion represents the rest of the court coming around to her position.
It sure is nice to hear you say things like that. Everybody, hold on. We're going to be right back with Empty Wheel. I can't promise it's all going to be such good news, but it's going to be good. So hang around. We'll be right back after this. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're one-ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Marcy Wheeler. EmptyWheel.net is her website and her handle on Twitter. And we're talking about this unanimous Supreme Court decision. It says the cops can't just go rifling through your cell phone on a fishing expedition unless they got probable cause they can show a judge to get a warrant to do so. Which, it ain't perfect, but hey, it's something. And like you're saying this is the Supreme Court coming around to the point of view that, you know, we really need to reassess all this kind of thing. It seems to me like it's sort of like the Geneva Convention prohibition on torture is really vaguely written deliberately in order to be all-encompassing, right? No degradation and this kind of thing. So where it can kind of apply very broadly. Same thing with Amendment Number 4. Papers and effects. My effects are protected. Sounds to me like that means all of my property of any description whatsoever, right? I mean, how can they define that down? That means the things that belong to me. And so I guess I'm always afraid when the Supreme Court is ruling on things like this because their word is final. For when they get it wrong, it can be a real hassle. But when they get it right, it can really matter. And like you were saying, some of the language in here is so good, it's bound to be invoked in all the rest of these court cases on the NSA and FBI and all kinds of stuff here.
Sam Alito's concurrence was pretty funny because he's like, I just think we need something more complex than just saying Fourth Amendment. And I laugh so hard. I mean, you know, he's supposed to be conservative justice, yet the Fourth Amendment is simple. And that's what Robert said, get a warrant. So that's great. You know, we can finally get back to the simplicity of the Fourth Amendment, you know, in a limited fashion. Although I do think that this opinion is going to have is going to impact other things.
Right. Yeah, that's great. You know, it's pretty rare the Bill of Rights wins a victory like this. So that's really good. Now,
you're not going to make me sad now, are you? Don't do that.
Oh, no. This one is still good news. I got two more good newses. And then if we still have time, I'll get to some bad news.
I'm going to run out the clock. Okay, go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, you can do it. I know you can. Well, I'll go ahead and give you both, and then you can measure the time out however you like. First of all, some federal judge struck down the no-fly list thing? That's absolutely unbelievable. You got to fill us in. And then I saw you tweeting something with our friend Cade Crockford on the Twitter there about a judge ruling against this FISA Amendments Act, Section 702.
No. See, now you are bringing me down. That's a bad decision. That decision.
I was trying, though.
I thought you were also going to talk about drones, but we did that already this week.
We can,
no,
well,
the,
yeah.
The 702 decision is in Portland, the case of the Christmas Day bomber.
Uh-huh.
Not bomber. The Christmas Day FBI sting pretend to press a button, not really a bomb case.
Right.
And in that case, he challenged the constitutionality and the judge said, no, it is constitutional. Little bit of crazy decision, which I'll write about in the next couple of days because it makes no. I mean, his understanding of the FISA court is just nuts. You know, because he kind of made assertions in one line and then the next line said, but the FISA court does something entirely different. So it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, he's a judge and he gets to not make any sense, I guess.
Oh, boy, did I read that tweet wrong then?
Yeah, sorry. No, Cade was telling me to get on it and depress everybody. And here I was wallowing in victory. Yeah. And then the no-fly.
Hey, you get to celebrate when you win one. It's okay.
I was going to spend the whole day, and here you want to bring me down.
Wow, I'm sorry. The no-fly though thing, that's a good one, right?
Yes. And I haven't read the opinion in detail, but basically what it argues is that the FBI is not providing people due process to be able to get off of it, which is not only important. I mean, the plaintiffs are, as ACLU always does, the plaintiffs in that case are really. It's very easy to be empathetic to them because, you know, veterans and solid, upstanding imams and a bunch of people who have no business on the no-fly list. But also, I think that by unpacking the sausage making that the government uses to put people on the no-fly list, we're really going to be able to connect the back end, the process the NSA uses to kind of dragnet everybody and decide which Muslims they're going to selectively torment, and then the front end, which is where it starts ruining people's lives. So it's unclear what's going to be rolled out, what kind of due process is actually going to happen. You know, I suspect that the government will try and appeal this because they hate losing any prerogative as the executive branch. But for now, at least, it brings something. I mean, we've got two decisions in a row that say that the no-fly list is unconstitutional. And so, well, not the earlier one wasn't quite that strong, but regardless, two decisions in a row that say that the no-fly list doesn't fly. And I think once you recognize how central flying is to people's lives, I think that decision can only be upheld. And, you know, the more we insert due process back into the places where the war on terror has removed them, the far better off we are going to be as a country. And frankly, the far better off, I mean, even from an efficacy standpoint, this sausage making process that picks which Muslims to torment doesn't work. I mean, the reason these people who have no business on the no-fly list are on it is because their process doesn't work. And so the way to fix that is with due process, but also with enough transparency to be able to point out that their algorithms or whatever the heck they're using just simply don't work.
Right. Yeah. A little bit of accountability to set things, you know, more properly. You know, you referred to that case, the entrapped Christmas plot there. You know, these kinds of things are going on in our country all the time, where the FBI, they're just basically, you know, holding their jobs, spending their budget, and trapping idiots. But meanwhile, Faisal Shahzad is trying to blow up Times Square, and Tsarnaev's trying to blow up Boston, but they're still screwing around, just doing things the old way, because that's what works well for them, not works well for security for the American people whatsoever. So there has to be accountability, or else they just keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, so... So yeah, really exciting.
I could imagine it, you know, like on Airplane One, where a little kid sets off the metal detector, and then a bunch of Islamic Jihad terrorists walk right through behind him with shoulder fired missiles and stuff. That's the kind of thing I'm imagining. The bad guys squeaking through because they're too busy, you know, hassling a little old lady in a wheelchair, or, you know, the equivalent. So, good point there, yeah. Now, so I'm out of good things to ask you about. You can bring up stuff if you know of any other good news, but otherwise I need to ask you if you know anything more about the drone memo that you think you need to mention to us, and or about the CIA report that now I think has bureaucratically moved from one place to the other, and now it's left only to the president whether he's going to release this thing or not.
Yeah, which depressing thing do you want me to talk about in 5 minutes?
Oh, in fact, you only got like 2.5. So,
all right.
I guess,
well, the short version is the torture memo. CIA says it has delivered it to the president, and he will make the final decision. And one of the things that's been in the background through this whole declassification process, not only is CIA trying to protect itself, of course, but also the president is trying to protect the allies who helped us torture. So, one of the things that the White House is probably going to spend the next 2 months redacting, because they told Jason Leopold, who has a FOIA in on this, that he's going to get it, or that it will be delivered to the Senate at the end of August. So they're going to spend 2 months, you know, crossing out all the places that talk about the British torturing or the Polish hosting torture sites. So that's where we're at.
There you go. Like we don't already know all about that.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, I just explained everything that's going on, but whatever.
Right. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But I guess they figure the longer they draw it out, the less anybody's going to be in trouble.
And they're going to release, yeah, and they'll release it when everyone is off at the beach. So I'll be here, though, reading it.
Oh, that's good. I mean, and yet we're still only talking about the summary, right? They're not even considering releasing the actual 6,000-page thingamajig, am I right?
Correct. Although when Dianne Feinstein, to her credit, when she released it, she says, eventually the whole thing will be released. 20 years from now.
Can't wait to read your blog that week. Holy crap. All right, that's the great Marcy Wheeler, emptywheel.net. Thank you, Marcy.
All right, take care, Scott.
All right, you guys. That's it for the show today. We'll be back here tomorrow, noon Eastern, on Liberty Radio Network. ScottHorton.org. ScottHorton.org/donate.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot. Though in older times, it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at ScottHorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future of Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.